podcasting softly, listeners. Podcasting then softly. Sorry, you're probably wondering why my voice has gone a little different than it normally is, and that's because I just installed this new app on a digital recorder that makes me sound like you. So, we're gonna have a little bit of fun today with this new technology. In the meantime, we're gonna be talking my very special guest here on Podcasting Them Softly. He's the director, Vito Trabucco. He's the director of such... there he is. Well, let's read off his credits, shall we? He's a writer, director, producer, actor, B-movie, Shooting of a Farmhouse Massacre, Homeland Security, Night of Demons, Hooligans Valley, Night of Horror, no, sorry, Visions of Horror, Slices, Bloody Bible Camp, Never Open the Door, Watch the Pretty Girls Suffer, Dead by Midnight, Psycho A Go-Go, Holidays of Horror, Bloody Bible Camp Part 2, and we're here to talk about his wonderful documentary. Is Henchman the Ao Leung Story? Vito, marvelous film, my friend. Marvelous film.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
It's so cool. It's as cool as that time Burt Reynolds was on The Golden Girls.
Not that cool, but you know.
Oh, but that was pretty cool, though. You're like, oh my gosh, yeah. It's Burt Reynolds on The Golden Girls.
Nothing beats Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, God bless him. God bless him.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So, Vito, first of all, before we get to Henchman, let's hear a little bit about your background. Your background in, obviously, you love movies. You don't have to be a guy who's a couple of sandwiches short of a picnic to figure that one out. But, so where did it begin, Vito? What was the film or the films or the era of cinema that influenced you to want to be a movie maker?
Oh, man, just 80s. I'm an 80s dude all the way. I grew up
all
in the 80s. That's the big one.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm Italian, so Godfather,
yeah.
Goodfellas and all that kind of stuff gets you going, of course. Growing up, it's always been 80s, and that's kind of how that Al was so kind of close to me for my whole life. But, I just kind of grew up in that era.
Right. What about The Irishman? You got to be looking forward to The Irishman, right?
Man, I hope. Fingers crossed. But, nowadays, it's like you get your hopes up, and then it's like everybody online says how amazing the movie is, and you watch it, and it's a turd. So I hope to God it's good. So fingers crossed. I mean, I'm always on Scorsese's side, so I'm hoping for the best.
Awesome. So you came out of the 80s getting your brain, as I did, saturated with the last golden age of cinema. And,
yes.
Plus the golden age of that late, great, magnificent invention, which was the VHS cassette, from which a lot of film that are on the list here that Al has participated in have literally survived because of VHS. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, besides, I mean, Al kind of has, his couple big ones from, Bill and Ted's and Big Trouble and everything like that.
Right.
But, like, the bulk of his stuff, like the TV and everything, oh, definitely, VHS and
right.
Everyone's
right.
Kind of, keeping that alive.
I thought it was great how I have a John Carpenter story. I won't go into it here. But I like how John sort of discovered him watching My Science Project.
Yeah, I was actually shocked when I heard that. I had no idea that's where you first saw him.
Yeah. That was cool. I was like, well, I love My Science Project. It's a great movie.
Yeah.
I
always
just
thought
like,
they met on Big Trouble. Like, somebody must have, kind of referred him to him for Big Trouble, but
yeah.
That's not where he saw him, and I always thought that's, because, like Al said, every Asian except for Al was working on that movie.
I know, and it's great. You've got all the horsemen in the film. You've got Jeff Amati, you got Gerald, you got Gordon Liu. I mean, sorry, James. Not Gordon Liu. Who am I thinking of?
James Liu?
Yeah, James Liu. Yeah. Sorry, Gordon Liu.
Liu has a good sound to it, though.
Sorry, I had a different kung fu movie in my head there. I was thinking of. Some other dragon chicanery, But, yeah, I mean, these movies, I mean, like you said, there's the big ones, there's the diehards, there's the Lethal Weapons, there's the, of course, Big Trouble, The Last Action Hero, Bill and Ted, but also, and I love how you got to talk to Craig Baxley. I love Craig Baxley's work, his Stephen King work,
yeah.
Of course, the A-Team, you know, who doesn't love the A-Team? And all those great Airwolf.
Yeah, my favorite Baxley movie is Action Jackson.
Of course. Oh, Action Jackson. Yeah,
love that movie.
Yeah, I mean it's funny. My wife is actually she's an Action Jackson. I knew she was my wife when she said she was an Action Jackson Iron Eagle kind of girl.
Oh man, yeah, that's a keeper.
And I was like, you know. That's sexy. That's as sexy as that new.
Yeah.
That's as sexy as that Top Gun 2 trailer. You seen the Top Gun 2 trailer?
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
Oh, didn't that just hit all the right notes?
I'm on board with that one. As soon as I saw that, I was like, oh man.
Didn't
I mean, say what you want about Tom Cruise, but that he does anything, and I was like, I love that shit.
That was like the greatest guitar player in the world strumming like those notes. You know.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like, it had everything. It had the volleyball. It had the Jennifer Connelly turns around and like, I'm an older woman, but fine as hell. And
yeah.
And, of course, you know, the great closing line, you know, maybe so, sir, but not today.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
And just boom.
I think I said that line like 5 times that day when I first saw the trailer. I just
boom.
Kept saying that line over and over again.
I get chills just talking about it, man. I get chills. I'm tingling. All right. So you came out of the 80s. You wanted to be a filmmaker. How did you go about it? Did you self-style or did you go to film school? Tell us your story.
I mean, I guess. I tried to do film school a little bit, not really working out. I mean, actually nothing that didn't work out. I can tell you the exact moment was I was about to do all that, and I'm literally watching this is a story, but I literally was watching Tarantino. It was on one of the late night shows right when Jackie Brown was coming out, and they were interviewing him about film school and all this kind of stuff, and he's like, I don't get it. He's like, if you want to make a movie, go make a movie. Don't go to film school. Just go make a movie. And the moment he said that, I was like, oh, fuck. That made perfect sense to me. And I was
right,
like,
I
quit everything I was doing,
he's
and I was done. I was like, I'll pay for it all myself and go with it.
I said, yeah, he's preaching the choir.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So you just plunged right in there.
Yeah, I was like, what the hell? I mean, you know, it's if I went to film school, I already knew what was going to happen. I was just gotten just buried, you know, beneath everybody in those schools, and I wouldn't have gotten ahead.
Right.
I think I actually, that's not for everybody. I mean, sometimes film school is definitely the best move, but for some people it's not. And I could just tell it wasn't going to be for me. So yeah, I just kind of dived into it and, you know, the hell with it. I knew I was going to suck for a while and just do anything, but I'll make anything. I'll just do it, you know, and just kind of go with it. I know I'm going to get criticized for a while, but, you know, sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. But it's weird because, I don't know, I started like late 90s, early 2000s, so I was still like in the film world before it turned into all the digital type shit. So I was, it's just a weird time. I always said like if I started 10 years earlier, I would have gotten a lot further ahead because now really, which is a good thing, anyone can make a movie now. Anyone could do everything from their house. They can cut a movie on their phone and shoot it on their phone if they wanted to. But I was, you know, coming from like late 90s and early 2000s, it was like, you know, it was film. You know, the first thing I think I shot was 16 millimeter, I think, something like that. So it was, I still have my 16 millimeter camera. And I was always like, damn, if I made the movies I made in the 80s or early 90s, it would have been, you know, at least I would have been a little bit further ahead, I think.
Right.
But anyone could say that.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, you come around a little bit too early, you come around a little bit too late, and you don't quite make it.
Yeah.
You know, but, yeah, I'm with you there. I mean, I did go to film school myself, but there's a question that I've been asking a lot of independent filmmakers recently, Well, because I talk to a lot of independent or low budget or micro budget filmmakers, whatever the category you prefer. Your filmmakers, right? Your directors. The question is this: it goes like, do you, now knowing what you know of this business, they have a lot of movies out there that are like, how movies supposedly showing you or a parody of how movies get made. My question to you is this: is like, I believe that Get Shorty is the most accurate depiction of how movies get made. Do you agree with that?
For me, it's probably closer to Ed Wood or Bowfinger.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's just being straight. I mean, it's funny. It's like, we were just talking about this the other day. It's funny you asked. So, I was talking to another director friend of mine, Lance Poland. We were just talking about, like, explaining to our girlfriends or whatever what it's like to, in, like, you know, in the movie scene or whatever. And, you know, people always think it's going to be exciting and they're going to do all this stuff. And I was like, the closest I could tell you it's going to be like, and I told you, is Ed Wood. You're around all these, like, misfits and everyone's
kind of wacky.
To me, it almost feels more like that. You know, you cling on to your old star and all that kind of shit. And, I definitely feel Ed Wood.
Right.
Unfortunately, it's probably rings more true to me than, but I do get good, Get Shorty. When you're in pre-production and you're going around town talking to people and doing that whole game,
yeah,
I definitely think Get Shorty nails it. That's exactly what it's like. Everything's a meeting and it almost feels exactly what you go through at the beginning. But the whole process is definitely with the people involved, the circus of making a movie. It, you know, I definitely see Ed Wood with that one.
Yeah. I tell you a little story, Vito. I recently had some success, first success I've had in 20 years, writing screenplays. I can't talk about it in detail yet, but I've been asking that question. You know, the whole, is it really Get Shorty? But I personally Paul Schrader'd myself into Hollywood.
Okay.
I Paul Schrader'd myself in. And if you know how Paul Schrader got into the movie business, then you'll know.
Well, I mean, what, with Taxi Driver?
Yeah, no, but
he was a
movie writer, not a screenplay writer. He was a movie writer and interviewed people who worked in the movies and, you know, every now and again, slipped them.
Oh, I see. Okay,
yeah. Like, slipped them screenplays or you know, like, hey, if you got 5 minutes after this, can I talk to you? And
I'd love to hear that.
Because I'm a Sunday screenwriter, you know?
Oh, good. I mean, yeah, that's fun. You do what you got to do, you know?
No, not that I'm a Sunday screenwriter. I mean, I've been trying to do this for 20 years, but so it's taken 20 years to get here. But it's just that's just the way I've been doing it. I found that I still believe in the old method, like sticking scripts under doors.
I definitely agree. I notice now, even nowadays, I notice I get a lot more better feedback, and I do a lot better when I give hard copies of the script instead of like emailing and shit like that. You know, when you give a hard copy, it just does better with people.
Yeah. Well, it's tangible. Some of you sit down and you drink your coffee and eat your breakfast, and hopefully for the writer you get involved. And next minute there's people talking to you and you're getting aggravated. You're saying, "Well, can't you see I'm trying to read here? You know, like, I've been entranced. Could you go away, please? could you take a step back across the room? Thank you."
Right.
But
here, now I'm thinking of all these movies about making movies that are just going through my head, like all these different ones I've seen. Now, I love this movie and this movie. Now I'm thinking of all of them. It's crazy.
You're thinking of The Player. You're thinking of
The Player. Have you ever seen Day for Night?
Yes. That's
one of the best, like, actual production, movies
Day
ever.
Living
in Oblivion is one of the best low budget movies.
Living in Oblivion, I love. I tell you, I
love it.
Yeah,
I love that movie.
I tried to get the director. I can't think of his name off the top of my head.
I can't either. Damn.
I forgive me, whoever you are. But I tried to get him on the podcast. He didn't want to talk about old stuff. I really wanted to talk about The Real Blonde, which was his second movie, which I really love. Again, I think that's a great depiction of it. I love how the fact that Steve Buscemi's character was directing the music video in Real Blonde, and Dave Chappelle was his his quite boisterous assistant director. But that's incredible. So let's stop talking about making movies and let's talk about you making your movie and let's talk about where did you bump into Al? I love the conversation you have to Al. Like, you're walking down the street, people don't recognize you, and he goes, "I think you're the only person that has recognized
me." Nah, he is just modest. I mean, look, we have lunch like every week, and a lot of the times we're just like sitting around like grabbing lunch, somebody will say something to him, walk up to him, and be like, "Oh, I recognize you." So it happens more than he acts like it. So where we met, so this is kind of like a weird one, how I even like fell into this and everything. So basically, my buddy, a good friend of mine, Matt Olivo, he was in my movie Slices, and he was this, he's actually a guitar player for an old 80s death metal band, Repulsion. And he,
Sorry.
Oh, you know that?
Yeah,
okay.
I wasn't clearing my throat. I thought it was funny.
An
old ladies death metal band.
No, 80s.
Oh, an 80s death metal band. I thought you said...
Yeah, not an old lady death metal. That would be fucking great if that was the case.
He plays in a band with old ladies.
No, an 80s. An 80s death metal band.
Okay, sorry.
They were the first ones ever.
Sorry.
They were one of the first ones ever. They were called Repulsion. He was just a buddy of mine. He was. We worked on a couple low-budget things together. We met in an acting class. We were just friends. And he hit me up one day, and he was like, "Hey, I met Al Young, that guy from Big Trouble Little China, all his movies." And he's like, and, you know, we kind of talked a little bit. And so he just said he met him. And then a couple weeks later, he calls me again. And he was like, "So I've been talking to Al, and I'm thinking about doing a documentary about him. He's like, would you want to help me?" And I was like, "Oh, hell yeah, definitely." So Matt's making the documentary about Al. Goes on for a little while, but Matt's too busy, and he goes on tour a lot with his band and everything. So it just went a couple years, and it wasn't getting done. And at that point, I don't know the whole story, but him and his girlfriend at the time broke up, and then she took over the documentary, and so somebody else has it then. And then during this time, I'm just friends with Al. Like, you know, we're cool with each other. We, you know, we talk, but somebody else is actually the one making the documentary.
Right.
More time goes by. Nothing's really getting done. It's nobody's real fault. Just people are busy, you know? And then more time goes by and nothing's really happening. So eventually, you know, me and Al were just talking, and we were like, he was like, "Do you want to do it?" And I was like, "Yeah, I can get it done." And then literally I just kind of took over, got all the, you know, the files, everything from Matt, got everything, started doing interviews and just kind of going with it. And it still kind of kept Matt involved in everything. And started going from there, and that's when I hired my co-producer, editor, Mark Bessinger, and basically it was us just kind of, going at it constantly and, you know, getting everything done as quick as we can. And I think it took me about a year and a half, 2 years total. And so the whole thing from the beginning was like a 5-year process, from when I first met Al to now, it was like five and a half years or something like that.
Whoa.
Yeah,
whoa.
so much.
Whoa.
And honestly, that is why, like, some of the sound's so bad in the movie is because I didn't have everything to make it. It's like I literally got so much back whenever we started putting it together. It was like, shit, this is what we got, you know?
Right.
That's what you get.
Yeah. I've talked to documentarians in the past, and I mean, people don't really give them the credit. To make a documentary is to share a piece of a life, not just the history, but you follow the subjects, you talk to all those concerned, And, you know, you live with this. This becomes a long process. It's not like you go for 4 weeks and shoot a movie and edit it and release it. You're collecting so much, so many stories. You're collecting so many accounts, and then you have to sit in the editing room and find the narrative. Is that
well? That's the thing too, because most docs, when it's yours from the beginning, you have like an overall view of how this is going to go. You know,
right,
you basically
right.
have. You know, structure. And this we didn't, you know, because it was kind of inherited from person to person. And once I got it, it was literally like, let's just figure this out now. Let's start putting it together. Let's figure out the story. And that's kind of how we went with it. So, I mean, it would have probably been a little bit different if I had it from the very beginning. But I mean, in the same token, I mean, it is what it is. I was glad how it worked out. I'll, you know, more than gracious when it comes to, putting his life out there, you know,
right.
He would, you know, show any pictures that were needed, anything that we had to do. And that was the weird thing about doing the doc. It was like, what can we talk about? What can't I talk about? But he was good with, you know, talking about the stroke and the cancer. And I mean, that's really the story. So if I couldn't talk about that, that would have, you know, would have ruined it. So he was great the whole way.
Because you need that. That's kind of like your, what do you say? That's kind of like the heart of the movie, the guy's personal story, not just, not just behind the scenes accounts of making movies. I mean, you can get those from the veterans all the live long day, but if his personal life is usually, their personal lives are usually as interesting as the films that they participate in. So it's
right.
You need that. You need, I mean, if they want to shield their personal life, there have been many great documentaries made on Orson Welles.
Yeah.
There's one on Netflix at the moment, They'll Love Me When I'm Dead.
I love that one, yeah.
Fantastic. Now, Orson Welles is synonymous for not revealing anything about his personal life. If at all, and at times probably only to give the myths a poke in the butt, like, oh, remember the myth, you know?
Yeah.
That I was when I was four, I was taught magic tricks by Houdini or whatever.
Yeah, right, right.
So, I mean, their lives in that particular documentary is as compelling a story without Orson Welles' life, because most people know that Orson Welles didn't talk about his life, certainly didn't do it in interviews.
Yeah.
So it is, I find with these kinds of documentaries, these portraits of professional men, their personal life, like, for instance, recently, Life After Flash. Have you seen Life After Flash?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Now, Life After Flash would not be as powerful as it is without the personal story of Flash Gordon, you know, the guy behind it. Like, Al is the guy behind these characters that we, they're indelible. The henchman who eats the candy bar.
Yeah, I agree. And I think what works too with Al is he was always a face. He was just a face you knew.
Right,
And most people who don't really do movies or follow movies closely, it was basically just a flashback to your youth when you see that face pop up.
Right,
like, oh,
sure.
Yeah, that guy, I kind of remember. So it humanizes the face to people who don't know him.
Sure. And we're all guilty of that when I know myself, when I have interviewed actors, I had the great privilege of interviewing Tim Thomerson, who is my personal hero. And I stupidly, in the back of my mind, hoped that he would be these characters that I love on screen.
Right.
But what I got was Tim Thomerson is those characters on screen. The guy is like he is in real life. And it was sort of better than him doing an imitation or doing lines for me to placate my, you know, childhood fancies of a character that he played before. I was so overjoyed that the man himself is the man that I know. And when he talks like Tim, you know, it's stupid, right? He talks like Tim Thomerson, okay? Al Lung talks like Al Lung, even though in the movies he didn't really do much talking. You know, the kung fu did the talking, or the little subtle moments. Hey, Genghis Khan, want a Twinkie? But so he loves Twinkies for the excellent sugar rush, right?
Yeah, no, he never wanted to be. He always said though he never wanted to be an actor. And he always just kind of prided himself on the stunt side.
He's
so
a stunt person.
I don't know. Maybe he liked acting. I didn't. You know, some stuff I'll never know. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. But it is an incredible film. John, Big Trouble in Little China is, I think, for me anyway, it's one of the reasons that I know God exists. No doubt. It is an incredible movie. It was. I believe it was ahead of its time. I have seen it on the big screen in the last few years, re-released. It stands up against any movie they put out today for fun, inventiveness, emotion, flat out moments where you want to stand and cheer and applaud. And it is one of the finest examples of how all of these elements come together and form a weird alchemy that no one knows how it's going to work. And when it all comes out on that screen, somehow it works.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's the first time I ever saw Out, too, was Big Trouble.
Yeah.
And then just constantly after that, it was nonstop. But I'm pretty sure that was the first time I saw him.
Yeah.
But I think somebody says this in the doc, and maybe not personally, but I kind of agree on a grand scale, is most people recognize Al because of Die Hard.
Yes, he's the chocolate bar guy.
Yeah, right. Even more than, you know, even the one that no one knows him is his biggest role, which is Bill and Ted's. But you have to kind of tell people he's Genghis Khan,
right.
And then they're like, "Oh, really? I didn't know that." But they always recognize him from Die Hard.
Yeah, you know what I think of when I think of Die Hard? I think of how I can't remember, not Alan Rick, but the blonde guy,
the long blonde hair guy. Yeah.
I could when I first saw that movie, I said, "Oh my God, it's the Ponzi conductor from the Money Pit."
right.
And, you know, so it's kind of like seeing Al Leung in Die Hard, and then you see him as Genghis Khan in Bill and Ted. You know, kind of the counterbalance. So you're like, "Hey, it's that dude from the Money Pit, man. Let's see."
What I really loved about Al's like career is, you know, one day he'll go and do Die Hard or Lethal Weapon, and then he'll flip it around the next week and go do like an Andy Sidaris movie, like Savage Beach or something like that. I love that so much, and that's what kind of makes him stand out to me so much.
God bless Andy Sidaris. I love that.
Oh, God, yeah. Besides Big Trouble, Savage Beach is my favorite Al movie.
I have to say that.
I love it. I love it. Al always has great stories about Andy Sidaris, too. He said that was one of the nicest guys he worked with, and, you know, kind of almost compared him to a Russ Meyer, where he was always on schedule and time and knew how to spend his money, and he made money. So everyone seemed to like him a lot.
I know that Sidaris has just an alchemy that teenage boys... It's part of your complete breakfast. I tell my son today about Andy Sidaris movies and what they did for me in my teens, and he's like, "Dad, that's stupid softcore action crap." And I'm like,
"Oh!"
I said, "That's it. You go to your room and don't come out until you've watched every Sidaris movie at least 7 times, and you come back and you tell me, and don't you dare ever let me hear you." Besmirch the name of Andy Sidaris in this house ever again, young man. I will not stand for it. But what I will stand for, and I'll take off my hat and I'll raise a glass of the finest ale known to man, to praise you, Vito, for this marvelous documentary, Henchman, the Al Lung Story. I believe it is on Prime as we speak. Is that correct?
As we speak, it is, yeah.
Right, so get out there, ladies and gentlemen. There is absolutely no excuse, Prime members.
Right, it's free, it's free.
No excuse, Prime members, not to watch Henchmen, this wonderful Valentine of a story, to one of the henchmen, one of those guys in the background. And when you see their faces, I guarantee you've seen them in film. And I love the fact that that James Liu and Ao Lung have probably beaten the shit out of each other more than any two Asian guys on screen.
Yeah, there was stuff we cut out because there's so much of those two, yeah.
You could literally, this could be legitimate. You could actually make a documentary of Ao Lung versus James Liu and go
probably
through,
could, yeah.
Go through all of the film and just have them sit like De Palma and just say, and just talk about the film, and they literally, I think you could get, oh, maybe not a feature length documentary, maybe a documentary short subject, James Liu versus Ao Leung, and just go through
I
all
think
of them.
They fought in each other in Savage Beach, the
they did,
movie.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
constantly.
It's an incredible documentary. It's on Prime at the moment. DVD, tell them where they can get the DVD.
It's on Amazon, the DVD as well.
It's on the DVD.
If they want anything signed, Al has a Facebook page for Henchmen, people can buy signed DVDs on there as well.
That's awesome. Henchmen, the Ao Leung story, my guest, Vito Trabuco. Vito, you're a great man. You're a beautiful man. You're a powerful
man. Thank you. You're great.
And we have loved having you here on Podcasting Them Softly.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, Ken.